Broadcasting live from beautiful, historic Marion, Ohio, it's Now with Scott Spears. Call Scott live on the air anytime at 740-383-9944. No topic is too big or too small. I'm your announcer, the man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. And now, here's your host, Scott Spears.
Thank you, man with the golden voice, Ted Williams. Scott Spears back with you here on this Tuesday, March the 19th, 2024. First day of spring, 2024, allegedly. 14 minutes past the hour. Very chilly morning here in the Marion area. Phone lines are open, 740-751-4038. Do you have anything to say in regard to anything we talked about in hour number one? Anything from Marion County Prosecutor Ray Grogan coming on last week talking about an investigation into City Auditor Miranda McGinnis and possibly a misappropriation of funds. Should know something within the next 30 days on that. Anything on the elections today? It is primary day here in Ohio. Anything on the comments made by former President Trump this past weekend in Ohio? Got a lot of play in a lot of different places. We've got our own state rep race going on here with Tracy Richardson and Weslyn Davis. We've got, of course, our local county commissioner primaries. It all should be very interesting. Davidson, Schauber, and Kerr Murray. How's that all going to turn out? I guess we'll all find out tomorrow morning, and we have a special guest tomorrow. I don't want to forget to mention from 9:15 until 10 a.m. You're not going to want to miss that. I think it's somebody you will want to hear from and somebody we have not heard from in a little while. So tomorrow morning, 9:15 until 10 a.m. 740-751-4038. The phone lines are open. 740-751-4038. And we were also talking about the eclipse in hour number one. We have a special event going on for the eclipse here at the station. Looking forward to that. April the 8th. Should have more details on that Thursday. I think yesterday we got pretty far in describing what was going to happen, but just need to tie up some loose ends. We'll do that tomorrow night and hopefully be able to tell you more about that on Thursday because it is coming up very quickly around the corner. I don't know if this will be a big thing or not. I'm still trying to figure it out. I don't know if people are going to be in town on top of each other for the eclipse. I don't know. It's all very interesting to me. Much like city politics and what's going on with the auditor. As I said in hour number one, if you went back in the over the last 5 years and tracked this whole auditor thing, it would make your head spin, everything that has happened. But here we are, nonetheless, charging forward. All right, go ahead, caller.
Are you doing election coverage tonight, Scott?
You know, I don't think so. We thought about it, but really, there's only two races, well, three, I guess, three races locally, and it didn't seem like a huge deal. I thought, we'll probably just report on it in the morning.
Oh, gotcha.
Yeah. What do you make of today?
Well, I don't know. As far as signs go in the commissioner's race, who are you seeing more of?
Oh, well, in the one, definitely Schauber. I've seen more signs. I've seen billboards. I've seen a lot of stuff there. That's the race with Kerr Murray. I really haven't seen anything from Kerr Murray. I'm sure there are signs out there, but I just haven't seen them. And
There's a few that I've seen.
And you got, I believe, Davidson in that particular race, which that's interesting to me because I've seen some Davidson. Now, I don't know if he tends more toward the Kerr Murray side of the party or the Schauber side of the party, but I'm guessing it's not going to be a big turnout today.
because the presidential primary is essentially over. So will Jason Schaber slip in on this one? I don't know.
So which seat is Davidson going? Is he going after Murray's seat or Appelfeller?
I believe it's Murray. So it's a three-way primary for Murray's seat. It's Schaber, Davidson, and Murray.
And then Tim Mooney's running for Appelfeller.
Mooney and Appelfeller, and I certainly have seen more Mooney signs, but I think Appelfeller's the longest-serving politician in our county at this point. So
yeah,
I don't
know. He's been there since the county was formed, I think.
He's been here a while, that's definitely for sure. But you know what? I looked down through this list, and the whole list, I mean, everybody running for office, there are three Democrats on the entire list. And it's interesting because two of them are having a primary for Marion County Treasurer, so one will be gone after today, Linda Davis and Karen Spencer.
Yeah, well... We've talked about their troubles many times, right, Scott?
Well, yeah, the local Democratic Party definitely has serious troubles. But I guess the races that are also of interest to us here in Marion are the state rep race between Tracy Richardson and Weslyn Davis. Where do you think that? Where do you see that one shaking out? Nasty race.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what to expect with that. What do you think?
You know, again, with low voter turnout, I have no idea.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It definitely will.
Now, what else do we? Oh, the state Senate race. I think that's going to tell the biggest tale as far as the presidential election goes.
Yeah, it will, for sure. I don't know. I've had a lot of people that are like, you know, what are your thoughts on this? But. I'm not confident in any of them, to be honest.
Well, it's fascinating how close it is, and clearly Trump was trying to make a point, being in Ohio on Saturday, to try to push Moreno over. Certainly, Governor DeWine was trying to make a point last week by endorsing Dolan. And then you've got the Secretary of State, who people recognize the name because it's on a lot of things, Husted in there. So it's really a tough race, and I think if Moreno wins, certainly you would have to say Trump still has power here. If Dolan wins, I think you would have to say that maybe Trump is losing power, because I think people see Trump and DeWine as polar opposites at this point. And if Husted wins, I think you would have to say that nobody cares about endorsements and it's not good for DeWine or Trump. Although I don't know DeWine will run for anything again, so I don't know that it bothers him.
Good. He can exit at any time, in my opinion.
Well,
any endorsement of his should be a red flag, like, do not vote for this man.
You know what's interesting, though, about DeWine, and I guess Kasich, the last two Republican governors, the last two governors of Ohio have both been Republican. They've both been two-term governors, Kasich and DeWine, and yet, by the end, most people who tend to the Republican side don't seem to like either one of them. So I don't know what's going on there.
They're what we call Republican in name only, otherwise rhinos. So most people are pretty well fed up with all rhinos, and that would include DeWine. So
in what way would you say that DeWine is not, or Kasich? Because, you know, when I look at the whole, I mean, I've covered both of these men. I mean, Kasich was very hard on the unions. Certainly that was a Republican issue. Kasich, last I knew, I don't think he ever changed, was pro-life. DeWine certainly was pro-life. He came out heavy against issue one. So in what way are they not Republicans?
Well, the Republican Party should not be defined by anti-union and pro-life necessarily. I mean, that's not everything that it means. I mean, it's enforcing law and order. It is trying to uphold our borders, which are completely porous, and you actually have the federal government that is facilitating, you know, more illegal immigration. And, you know, speaking out against federal government overreach, and when you have a politician that goes along with all of that against the interests of the people of their state and those that they represent, then that's the definition of a rhino.
You know what's interesting about the border issue? And I don't remember it at all during the Kasich administration, but certainly Ohio not being a border state. Now, not saying that we don't have impact from what's going on at the border, but Ohio not being a border state, and talking about state politics here, a governor who really just deals with the state, I think it's interesting that that has become more of an issue than abortion or unions, which certainly are state issues. Certainly abortion was a state issue, but brought more people out to vote than the last gubernatorial election did. And now that is a state-to-state issue. And the unions, which certainly are a state-to-state issue. So it's interesting to me that the border now trumps those two as in a non-border state as big issues.
Because they don't stay. It's not like they're staying within 20 miles of the Rio Grande. I mean, they're coming from all over the world, and they're being dispersed. And those governors, you know, a lot of times go along with what the federal government, you know, wants to do instead of standing up and taking a stand, you know, against those policies and defending the interests of the people in their state. You know, they'll accept, you know, however many that the federal government wants to relocate. And, you know, that's a huge, huge national issue. You can't have national sovereignty when you don't enforce your borders. But by God, they'll try to enforce the borders in Ukraine or Israel and send any number of, you know, billions of our dollars over there, but they can't do anything in this country. And people, I think, are sick of it.
Well, yeah, and just to kind of play the other side here, I'm guessing that the reason...
Come on, Scott, lay it on me.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I guess, I guess the idea behind... 2 points there. If you're the governor of Ohio, you could support or not support what, you know, is going on nationally, but that is a federal issue right now, so you can either go along with it or not go. You can object to it, but you're really going to have to go along with it, because right now border patrol and control is a federal issue. Now, abortion, state issue right now because of the overturn of Roe versus Wade. Unions always has been a state issue. So I think that becomes a little different. And also, Ukraine compared to what's going on here, I don't know what the policies are in Ukraine as far as immigration, but I think right now the issue with Ukraine is that they're at war, and that let's not bring people in here who are going to get blown up, or let's bring people in who can help us.
Let's make sure all of them are blown up, and then we'll let you. And Zelensky actually said that. He said that the vision for the Ukrainian state in the future is one of diversity and immigration.
Well,
you kill off all your native Ukrainians, and then you open the floodgates,
well,
and let everybody from the third world in.
I mean,
Zelensky said that like 2 weeks
ago. Right, but I mean,
fact check that.
Well, right, but as sad as that sounds, I mean, isn't that pretty much what we did after World War II? I mean, a lot of people were killed, and there were immigration was not a huge
issue.
Well,
we lost 290,000 people, I think, in World War II.
Right, and
so as far as our loss of life was relatively minor compared to you know, the Soviet Union or Germany.
Oh, absolutely.
But no, when we waited until 1965 to completely upend our immigration policy, so that happened under the Johnson administration.
Right, which I think was the Korean War also happened in there as well. So you got to lump the Korean War in. And also
again,
the start of
Korea was only like 50,000 people, and Vietnam was, I think, like 60s.
But I think it was, but I think it was a reaction to the idea that, you know what, there are certain people who don't want to do certain jobs, and if we continue along this route, prices are going to go up, and this is not going to be good. And where is the labor force? And I think that was the issue there. And I think in Ukraine right now, I think he can say anything he wants, the president of Ukraine. If he's blown off the face of the planet, it really isn't going to matter.
Well, right. But, you know, we're spending, they're printing money. I mean, that's what the Federal Reserve and the U.S. government does in tandem with one another is, you know, they print trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars and spend it, give it to other nations, a good chunk of it, and then we're left holding the bag here, and we sit around and wonder why our dollar keeps losing value, and it's because of those policies. And then meanwhile, our federal government is facilitating, you know, millions of illegals to be spread across this country, all the while, you know, native-born American fertility rates have plummeted. You know, they're.
But is that a bad thing? Is that? I mean, honest to goodness,
it is if you're just replacing them. If you were to say, "Oh, well, we're just, you know, we're overpopulated," which in this country is not true when you look at the, you know, square mileage. And how much land and resources that we have, but when your native population is declining at a rapid pace, and then you're just all bringing in and, you know, letting the third world come into this country, and it's one thing to have an immigration policy that is open if you don't have a welfare state, but when you have a welfare state, then you're opening yourself up to just further liabilities of the welfare state. So that's the problem. You know, you can't really have both. And when it comes down to it, if anybody is going to try to take care of people, we should take care of our own, you know, American people. So, and I think a lot of people feel that way.
You know, I think a lot of people do. I think a lot of people feel the opposite way. You know, this is one of those things where...
But they don't want to pay for it. The people, that's the thing that gets me, is this sentiment that, oh yeah, everybody should pay. Well then, why don't you make an example? Why don't you open up your house? Why don't you open up your personal pocketbook instead of using, you know, other people's money? And it really irritates me that is the mentality of so many people on so many issues when you have a democratic form of government, is they're all in for spending your money, but they're not stepping up and, you know, doing it. If they want to be idealistic, then yeah, donate all your disposable income and open up your house and everything you own to what you believe in. But no, they don't want to do that.
Well, it's interesting to me, I guess, on a side note. I think Americans are very interesting, and it's hard to lump everybody into the same category here. But I've said this before. A certain group of Americans make all their decisions based upon money. And I just don't know about that. I mean, if they are comfortable financially, then it's okay. I mean, I'm shocked. I get on social media to do my little plugs for the show or whatever, and I see people asking for money. They're asking for money for all kinds of different reasons. I'm not saying I'm not the arbiter of what's good and what's bad and what people should donate to and what people should not donate to. But this is what they do. They go to social media. They ask for money. Help me, help me, help me. It's weird in a way. Money makes people happy. Money makes life easier, I guess, is the theory. Money takes away depression and anxiety. It really doesn't do any of these things. But for a moment it does, if you're having financial troubles, and people will get themselves into bad situation after bad situation based upon money. And I don't know. It's an odd thing to watch happen. And I guess you find out somebody's true character when you see that happening.
I agree that that should not. I mean, the old biblical adage that the love of money is the root of all evil. I do agree with that. We do live in a world that is driven by money. But what is money, Scott? What is money? Money is a monetization of your time, energy, and life. And when you work for that, you know, you are giving your life in exchange for compensation, for money in order that you need to live. So people should be concerned about preserving their money because it is a reflection or representation of their time, their life, and their energy.
So, oh, you have to have money to live. I agree 100%. What I'm saying is people make bad decisions based upon only money. Now, they will tell you that's not the reason that they're making those decisions because that sounds very shallow. But if you look at it, that's really what they're doing, and I don't know. There's something about that to me, I guess it's because at this age, I have never made a decision based upon money. I can say that. Any job I ever took or any position I ever did or really anything I ever did, I never said, I'm going to do that for the money. I never did that, and I ended up okay. You know, I've never had to file bankruptcy. You know, I don't have these issues. And my money was not driven. I've always had food. My life was not driven by money. So when I see people making decisions based upon money instead of happiness, because you are going to be stuck at work a good portion of your life, you are going to be stuck with certain people for a good portion of your life because you make those decisions. Those people making those decisions, you know what I see? I see different job after different job after different job. I see different, I see divorce, divorce, divorce. I see depression, depression, depression. And I think, well, maybe you should stop making decisions based upon this. Yes, you need money to live, but stop doing everything based on money. Pay attention to something else in life because it goes by like that.
No, I agree with that. I think it's an idealistic position, and it's a good position to have, you know. But when you think about it, you are a slave to money. You are exchanging your life for that, and I think your point, you know, runs counter to that, is at least if you pursue things that bring you happiness, you know, and hopefully enough money will follow that decision or that path in order to, you know, allow you to live. But it will at least hopefully bring you happiness.
You know what's interesting? I was thinking about this the other day, and heaven knows we've had conversations about things from the past, but the other day I really thought about something. I thought about the fact that, you know, we always say that saying, hindsight's 20/20. And you know what? That is really true with almost every aspect of your life. Because the other night after we did the Friday night show, I started to think, you know, if I look at the people in the past who are no longer in my sphere. Now, I have to say that they were in my sphere at some point because I like them. I mean, why else would I have had them there if I did not like them, if it was not a good time. So at some point, it had to be a good time. But now that I look back at some of those people, I think I don't think they were bad people. I really can't say that any of them were bad human beings. But when I look back at them now, I look at what their motivation was. I look at what their day-to-day attitude was. I look at how they saw things. And it's no shock to me that they're no longer around, because I think they had flawed personalities. And not that I'm perfect, I'm certainly not, but they, you know, I don't want to say anything that they would say to me, because it sounds rather harsh. I mean, they weren't negative toward me, but they would, I think I've said this before, so I'll say it again, but I mean, I had somebody say to me one time, or many times during the time that I was around them, my life's not like yours. My life doesn't turn out happy. I'm not happy all the time. It doesn't work like that for me. And you know what I thought? I thought, we're both human beings. We both live in the same county here. What's different between you and me? I just have good luck and you have bad luck? I mean, I couldn't believe that statement. And that was said to me more than once. So I thought, gee, now that I look back at that, I thought, boy, that should have been a big red flag for that person.
Well, our culture has, I guess, encouraged a victim mentality as opposed to self-reliance and that sort of thing. So I think everybody looks to make excuses and claim victim status as opposed to realizing that, you know, they can make a difference on their own by their own choices and their own work. But that's the difference, is it takes work, it takes sacrifice in a lot of cases, and people don't want to do that. They would rather just sit there and be depressed and say that they're a victim,
right?
And
but
blame
you,
other people.
But that's where this comes back to money, because if the money, I mean, essentially, that's what they're talking about. They're talking about, they're usually talking about health, and they're talking about money. And if either of those things come up, if somebody comes around with money, or they get a promotion and they start making more money, that turns their life around in a way. But yet, it's fleeting. And that, to me, is the that's the sadness, because I know at some point that will crash. It's a temporary Band-Aid. So I guess I'm never angry at these people. I can never say that I'm angry with them. I can just say that I feel bad for them. I almost have pity for them that their life is in that kind of shape at this point. I would think at some point you would have figured it out.
But most people won't.
And never will.
I think it's, and we've said this before, I don't think most people don't have the ability to be introspective and to reflect on their own life in a substantive way in order to make changes. And analytical skills, again, those are not encouraged by our society. You know, in the education system and stuff, this is the question and this is the correct answer. It's not to analyze the issue and to theorize and to be critical. We don't really focus on that. We focus on, here's a question, this is the answer. It's in your book, you know. And that is good to create a population of order takers and service people, but it's not for thinkers and people that are going to innovate and think outside of the box. We don't really prepare people for that. So if you develop those skills on your own, or you were born genetically with, you know, the right makeup to think that way, you're going to be a rare individual in today's today's world.
Well, I think just in the end, I think they're just waiting for somebody else to come in and tell them how to think and tell them how to be. And I think in the end, also, they don't ever fully have any kind of happiness. I think what they have is maybe a little bit of security because they were not, I don't know. I know, and I'm absolutely sure, that so many people in life have gotten into situations. Now, you can call them marriages, you can call them relationships, you can call them roommates. People have gotten into those situations simply because they could not pay the bills. Now, I don't think they rationalize it that way. I don't think they go, I'm going to do this strictly because I can't make my rent payment. I think they see it more as an adjunct. They think, oh, okay, well, this is help with that. But I don't think they see that that's why they're making that decision. And all I'm saying is, I guess if you go into something and you've got financial trouble and all of a sudden it's the greatest thing in the world, take a look at that. Because the relief of the financial trouble was probably more appealing to you than anything else, even though you probably don't believe that.
Yeah, no, that's good advice. And I would encourage people to reflect on where their money is going and why their dollars continue to be worth less and less, and look at what our federal government and the Federal Reserve is doing.
Now, on a lighter note, though, I did get my NCAA bracket yesterday, which I have not filled out yet. And since this
good transition, Scott.
How did you? That's how you get to sit in this chair when you make transitions like that. I know, right from Ukraine to people wrecking their lives to the NCAA. That's how we do it on this show.
No topic too big or too small.
No. Hit us up on the phone line. I've got my NCAA bracket now. Now we're going to fill these out here at the station to see who's going to win, but I have not filled mine out yet. I have it. Who's going to win the whole thing?
I have no idea. What I do enjoy watching the tournament. I don't watch during the regular season just because in the end it doesn't matter. It only matters if you get to the tournament and you win. So I'll then do my research and try to put together, some semblance, even though it is by definition madness, so it doesn't really matter what the statistics and that sort of thing are during the regular season. But I do always fill out one. I have for years, ever since I was in high school, and I fill out a separate bracket where I compare the mascots. So if the mascots were real life creatures, what mascot would win in a fight?
So there you go.
Yeah, like a bear versus a gamecock. You're going to say, the bear would, rip the gamecock apart, so the bear's going
to
win.
Now,
I
do have to say this, that the national championship game will be on April the 8th, Eclipse Day. So apparently they didn't get the memo that was Eclipse Day. So there's a lot going on Eclipse Day. There's the eclipse. There's the national championship. It's the first day of the star will now be delivered in the post office. It's a big day, that April the 8th.
Oh, yeah. So you can come to Marion, watch the eclipse at, 3 o'clock?
3 o'clock. Get your newspaper in the mail.
Yeah, and then go to B-Dubs in Marion and watch the game. And then 3 days later, you can hear about the eclipse in the game.
Well, I had to send the bracket to Carrington because she's not back from vacation yet. I think she comes back middle of this week. So I sent her bracket to fill out, and I'm not even sure she'll realize what it is. I think she might realize that she might think it's some kind of test.
She's a smart woman. She'll figure it out.
I told her, I said, just fill it out at some point, take a picture and send it back, and that way we'll have it on file because you have to turn them in before Wednesday night, before the tournament starts. So I think Matt has already filled his out, so we'll see how this all shakes out. But now Matt could be good at this. He says he doesn't know anything about basketball. I really don't know. Maybe he doesn't. He certainly knows something about football. Carrington, I don't even know if she knows what a basketball is. You know, we'll see. So I've got to beat her. That's really what this is all about. Because I don't know anything about this either. I'm not saying I'm an expert on this. But I certainly have to do better than her, because the last time we did this at the station 2 years ago, I did this with somebody who didn't know anything about basketball either, and I did beat that person. So I feel like I have a record I need to keep intact.
It really doesn't matter. I mean, you can spend hours trying to go over statistics and probabilities and things, and in the end, it is madness. There's really... not a whole lot of strategy that can go into it. You know,
I like a good...
Especially here lately, though, in the last 10 years, with the number of high-seeded teams that upset, you know, lower-seeded teams, you know, nobody would guess that they would have any chance, but by God, they win. And, you know, it makes it fun that way.
Yeah.
And then I know some people that will add on their extra points if, you know, you pick for... how many games will go into overtime. You know, I don't do mine that way, but I know people that do, and so you can have a lot of fun.
You certainly can.
Group of people.
Now, aside from this this tournament, where do you think this whole thing's going to go with Grogan and McGinnis? I know you're interested in the local politics. I certainly think this is the biggest story. The investigation's not over. We're going to see what's going to happen in the next 30 days. I know there are still some people who are skeptical that anything will come of this, but what do you think?
And we'll see how McGinnis compares to Grogan's mother, I guess.
Now, here's an interesting thing. Did you think that came off? How do you think Grogan came off in that whole interview? Because I'll tell you something interesting. I heard from one person who said, I thought he came off really well. And then I heard from somebody else. See, I never know. When you're doing an interview, you never really know. And then I heard from another person who said they felt he was shaky. So I don't know. How did you think he came off?
He's very well spoken and, you know, has a good amount of energy to go along with that. So the one thing that I keyed in on was, he said 999 times out of 1,000 cases are referred to his office from investigative authorities. So like the police, the sheriff, the state, you know, highway patrol or whatever. So even though, and he prefaced that by saying that they have that authority to prosecute anyone and investigate any crime within Marion County. So, I'm saying we have the authority, but almost every time we rely on those investigative agencies to bring them to us. So, that bears a question then, if there was something that was, you know, you're in the hometown of Marion, and let's say it implicated somebody with close ties to those local investigative agencies, you're relying on them to internally police themselves and to bring it to you, right?
I think that, yeah, in this particular case, my understanding is what happened was this information was found out, and then what people thought was an admission in an open meeting happened. Then I believe it was turned over to local law enforcement by certain people. Then the investigation happened, and at the end of the investigation, it was turned over to Grogan's office. So that's my understanding of exactly how it got to where it is.
Well, but it's not just that case. That is the procedure and how things appear to work, according to him. So
yeah, I think
beyond just that individual case, that's what you're dealing with.
But I would think a high-profile case like this and the whole situation with the auditors that we have had and the fact that he did not recuse himself in this case, which he did in the last one, I don't know. I think it's interesting. And I think it was also, most people felt it was done. I mean, that's one of the reasons I asked him about it, because a lot of people felt, because nothing had been heard, that that had just completely been dusted under the rug, and apparently not so.
Well, we'll see. You know, I hope there's a semblance of justice and law and order. It doesn't, it's kind of a rarity, I think, in much of this country of late. So, you know, and that's not to say that you have anything against people, but, you know, you need to have law and order and equal justice under the law, and that needs to be pursued at all times. And hopefully whatever is right in this case will be carried out.
Well, it's going to be interesting because, as I said, it's a kind of a technical thing, because my understanding, and again, this is just my understanding, is that the deputy auditor is the one who actually did the misappropriation, and she just okayed it. So I don't know how that plays out long term.
Well, that he has, you know, connections to the Landon administration. He worked in that administration too, right?
Yeah, I believe he did.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know. That's an interesting component for sure, and hopefully that's being looked into.
You know, I wanted to ask you this, back to where we were in the beginning of this, because I was kind of shocked. You know, Saturday when was it Saturday when Trump was in Ohio? I think Saturday.
When
he was here, and this whole bloodbath comment came up, you know, I didn't think too much of it at the time, but somebody did send it to me as soon as it happened, but I just kind of, okay, and went on with it. I've been shocked Sunday and yesterday at how many people who normally don't talk politics, don't really have any interest in it, have come up to me and said something about that comment, and are very, now the people I've talked to, very unhappy about it. I didn't realize it would raise that kind of ire in people, and I'm not sure, I don't know. It's very interesting. I because usually the comments have just rolled off, and life goes on, and what do you think happened with that particular one?
Well, the mainstream media during the entire Trump administration, I mean, they just, like, went all out. I mean, that's just a fact, you know. And
yeah, but I think they've done that on almost all the things he's said. That, I mean, the whole dictator
thing. That's
what
I mean. And it was very much, you know, them going after him, kind of a one-sided, you know, thing. There's some criticism of Biden by the mainstream media, but usually that's fairly tempered. So, you know, they put it out there. People, watch CNN or MSNBC or whatever, and then they put it in the context of that he was talking about, you know, something else. I mean, the context, if you actually listen to the speech or you read the transcript, was of the auto plants being built by,
well,
you know, China and Mexico.
I'm glad you brought that up, with 3 minutes left to go. Time gets... Now, I listened to it. I didn't listen to it at the time, but I went back and listened to it because so many people brought it up. And, yeah, he was talking about the auto industry, but what was he saying exactly? I mean, what was the bloodbath?
Well, the bloodbath is what's going on in our economy, and kind of goes back to what I was saying. It's not good. It's being propped up. If you look at the stock market is being carried by like five or six stocks. And how is that happening? It's because of the special relationship that certain corporations have with the Federal Reserve to buy those stocks. So they're getting much, like BlackRock. BlackRock went from $500 billion in assets in like 2007 to now I think they're upwards of $11 trillion in assets. Well, so they own controlling shares in almost all blue chip companies.
With
how do you get that? Well, you get that from the Federal Reserve printing money, devaluing our money and the buying power of our dollars, giving it to BlackRock, and then they go in here and they buy up all these corporations.
I got 90 seconds. Well, we can continue this tomorrow because it's an interesting conversation, but why not just say what you said? Because after a while, I would have to think that President Trump knows that the media, as you just said, is going to jump on something when he says something like that, or even just throw the word financial in there. It's going to be a financial bloodbath. I think that is what the problem was for a lot of people. When the rally opened on Saturday with the alternative national anthem for the January 6th people, I think that just probably did not play well with a whole lot of people.
Well, that's another topic for conversation in itself, but yeah, I mean, but that's his appeal to a lot of people, and it was when he ran first time, was that he wasn't coming across as a fake politician, somebody who, you know, uses focus groups, you know, for every single thing that they say. And, you know, could he be, now, you're either going to like that or you're going to hate that.
And maybe it'll play well. If Moreno wins tonight, I think we'd have to say that it played very well and his appeal's still there. I just have found it interesting how many people kind of bothered by that. But we'll see as time runs out. Hey, thanks for calling.
All right, Scott. See you.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Talking Place from Charlie Evers.
Yeah, you know, you could come in handy, too, with that electricity. If we have problems with our transmitter, which is above you.
I know.
Yeah. All you'd have to do is raise your hands and energize our transmitter.
To formerly of WNCI, Weasel Boy, is that true? I've never asked that question on air before, by the way, but
I can tell.
I wasn't even sure how to word it.
When the way your arms got